the reason that America was able to become so rich and so powerful over and above any other empire that's ever existed is they used their the monetary base of their gold to create a global inflationary system where all of the goods and services just flowed into their own country. And all they had to do was export paper and say, "Oh, that's gold too. And that's gold. It's it, we have it all. Just give us the stuff." And it was like, "Oh, okay, fine." Hey guys, Rafi here from the Endgame Investor with my good friend Phil of the Bitter Draft on Rumble. Check out that channel link in the description below. And this week he talked about capital controls. So we're going to talk about not necessarily his episode specifically, but capital controls, what they are, why they are probably coming, and why they're just another price control and just another way to get to the end game, which is all the same destination anyway. We're just talking about a maze with all paths leading to the end game, and it just depends which path we want to take. And so Phil, how are you doing? And relative to other paths to the end game, is capital controls, do you think, a not as bad one or a really bad one, or where is it on the scale of horribility, horribleness?
I'm doing well, Rafi. Capital controls are they might come very suddenly and then knock a lot of people who thought, oh, I'll just, I've got $20,000 in my bank account. I'm going to go out and run buy, some silver right now or something. Then that money's locked and they won't be able to get it at any price. So that would be the horror level. I don't think it changes anything. I think I said that on my video too. That doesn't really change, like you said, the ultimate destination, but it changes a little bit the journey. So instead of a sharp dive down, it's kind of a jittery sharp dive down.
Okay, so just to define capital controls, price controls are usually talking about the government sets like a maximum on gas or food or consumer goods or whatever. And capital controls is basically they're not controlling the prices, they're controlling your ability to use money or to use currency. Is that it?
Yeah, that's the way I understand it as well. I did some research for my video, and that's what I understand. In fact, we have sort of capital controls right now. I think there's a federal tax on profits of gold at like 30%, and silver too. So if you buy gold at 500 and sell it today at what, 2200, then you have to pay like a 30% tax on all that, and that is specifically designed to keep people from investing in gold. Now, I believe that's a collectibles tax. So it's the physical. So they don't care about the ETF, or the, I don't even know if they care about the vaulting. But apparently, if you were to have bought a gold ounce and then tried to resell it, you have to pay that collectibles tax. So I look at that as a capital control. That's a Pigouvian tax, I think, and that I don't think they're trying to generate revenue off of that. They're trying to discourage the behavior of stacking. And sorry, I should define that. A Pigouvian tax is a tax the government institutes to discourage a behavior, not to generate revenue. So a tax on cigarettes, it has the benefit of driving revenue for the government. However, it's typically the bootleggers and Baptists where they're trying to the Baptists are trying to discourage people from smoking.
So it's a social engineering tax.
Yeah, social engineering tax, exactly. So the way I look at capital controls in that instance is to keep people in the system. In fact, that's what I would say, because during the end game, during a hyperinflation, people are going to be trying to turn their currency into, if not immediately just running out to buy a pair of pants for $50,000, then at least to put it into an investment that will not depreciate as quickly. So the capital controls are to lock them into the system to. And they're going to say, oh, it's to discourage speculations, but speculations are just people trying to, get their money out of the system or get their purchasing power out of the system, which is the money
Right.
system.
So what can you say historically about price controls? Just to like lead us through what's happened or some examples that you've studied. Would you call a bail-in capital control, or is that something different? What's happened that stood out in your mind?
Oh, sure. So historically, the term capital control is all encompassing. It's not just, a narrow defined a term. It means like literally, you know, anything that involves limiting your ability to freely move capital, I would say would be a control of capital. Historically, in the at the end of the Bretton Woods system is when they really were like, hey, this is a pretty good idea. We should really direct society from up on high. And of course, you ended up with things like shortages, rationing systems, and they used the excuse of the war originally. And I remember my grandparents telling me stories about, you know, having a car but having trouble finding tires in like 1946, you know. and it just because there was no market mechanism and the tires were being rationed, even in 46, you know, the capital controls were not removed, so the rubber was still going through the, you know, U.S. War Department at the time, right?
Right, rubber was important for the war effort, right?
Yes, very important.
For tires for the trucks or for what?
Yeah, for the trucks in the war effort, yeah.
Okay.
So even
by 1946, there shouldn't have been any problem with finding tires, but there still were because the capital controls from the World War II era were still enforced.
We're still, yeah, that stuff was still in place. Exactly right. Exactly right. And you were still getting tickets for butter, stuff like that. So now back then people had their own gardens. I mean, my grandmother to the end of her days had a large garden. So, and she grew up, you know, she grew up in the Depression. So she was used to, she was always canning stuff and pickling. And she's like, you know, we're never going to pretend like that's not going to has a chance of happening again. But to go to the store to get butter, you know, it may not be there because there was a capital control and the butter was being redirected to, you know, the army as they were, you know, decommissioning everybody. But the butter was still going to the war effort, the occupation effort by that point. And then the price of butter was supposed to go way up. However, instead of allowing the market price of the remaining butter to float, it had a price ceiling and then sent out ration cards where you could only get a certain amount of butter per month or week or whatever.
So you're saying we went from literal guns and butter to literal guns and figurative butter?
Yeah, I guess you could think of it that way.
All right.
I guess you could think of it that way. But anyway, so after the war, you know, things slowly wound into more free market. After what you have discovered with how bad the monetary system is, I wouldn't describe us living in a free market right now. I mean, sure, the prices are allowed to float, but they're allowed to float in a fake derivative. It's like, I don't know. I don't know how to explain that. I mean,
yeah. Well, I this is just coming to my head now, but maybe you could use the analogy of, let's say you're on drugs and you're totally high off your mind, out of your mind, and you have no idea what reality is, but you're walking around, you know, just like staggering, and you can still stagger into places and buy stuff. So you're still free, but like you have no idea what you're doing. Whereas, as opposed to if you're totally drugged out of your mind and you're chained to a wall.
Yeah. There you go. I don't like that.
Okay. So yeah, everybody's drugged out of their minds on fiat, but we're still, you know, relatively free in where we can move and where we can trade. We have very bad ideas on what to trade and for how much because price signals are so messed up. And then you have the gold and silver stackers that are saying all these prices are wrong and they're all going to fall extremely hard in these terms. You know, whenever the drugs run out and everyone's like, what are you talking about? I'm going to the store right now.
I feel great. I can stop anytime I want to.
Actually, that brings me to page 21 here in this book, 40 centuries. I don't know if you can see 40 centuries of price controls, how not to fight inflation. I highly recommend this book. I just started. I'm on page like 40 something. This was recommended by Daniel Oliver of Myrmecan Capital. He wrote about it in one of his recent research papers.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Here it is. Here's a quote here. And I'm not sure who he's quoting exactly. Oh, I'll just read the paragraph. During the 50-year interval ending with the rule of Claudius Victorinus in 268 CE, the silver content of the Roman coin fell to 1/5,000th of its original level. With the monetary system in total disarray, the trade, which had been a hallmark of the empire, was reduced to barter and economic activity was stymied. So you had an endgame in Rome in 268. Okay. The middle class was almost obliterated and the proletariat was quickly sinking to the level of serfdom. Here's the key. This is what I wanted to emphasize. Intellectually, the world had fallen into an apathy from which nothing would rouse it. Right? So, again, we see the connection. And that's from the book, The Edict of Diocletian, in 1947. Right? So we're always wondering, why is it that hyperinflation goes along with stupidity? Because, you could try to pick out every approximate cause as to why it happens, but we do see that it happens, and we can definitely see that it's happening now, that people are, it's like a combination of stupidity and arrogance at the same time. And it shows up everywhere. And I don't want to call the Bitcoin people stupid and arrogant. They're not exactly that. It's more just like, some of them are very smart, but so was Diocletian, and he, messed everything up. But like,
yeah,
you see the stupidity coming from specifically the smart people. And it's infuriating, because like you look at them and like, don't you see what you're saying? And they don't. And there's really nothing we can do until the drugs wear off. And then the good part about that is, you were talking about your grandmother who went through the Depression, and she had her own garden and she knows what it's like. But the thing is, in the Depression, people didn't trade gold and silver directly, because the dollar was increasing in strength, because they chose the deflationary path instead of the hyperinflationary path. So the negative part of that was that everybody got used to the dollar being money, and then that kind of filtered down to our generation. But in the next generation, our kids, they're going to understand that gold and silver are money. They're going to get it. They're going to get it very well.
Quite viscerally, I would imagine. Yeah.
Yeah.
So if I may take us back to price controls, the capital controls, what I saw with the wide range of available options, I was just looking, I said, because you and I both have the same libertarian mind. We were both, I think, on this train. We're like, okay, the currency, we're going to have these issues with, the repo market's going to break, and the currency's going to, they're going to turn on the printers again, and everything's going to go to infinity. And then the government's going to say, oops, we were sorry. By the way, Fort Knox is empty or almost empty. So good luck. You're on your own. Right. And we're going to, start trading in coins basically almost right away. What the hyperinflation of France article made me realize, at least got the juice is turning in my head. The juice is turning. The gears turning. I don't know. Just juice turning.
Juicy gears. The juicy gears.
The juicy gears turning in my head was They will definitely try capital controls. These are definitely in our immediate future. And the capital controls in the hyperinflation booklet in France were like punishable by death. Like if you charge too much for your bread, Madame Guillotine was waiting for you. So if you were lucky, it was like severe fines and prison time and stuff. And still, they didn't work. Like the bakers just charged more for their black market bread. So it does. Capital controls never work. They never ever work. But they are the tool of the desperate dying regime, and they are always implemented. So I wanted people to be ready for that, because this is going to enter into our lives. So the sooner you understand that, and the sooner you can, you might have to prepare for it in ways that you didn't have to prepare for, say, a hyperinflation. Because in the capital control market, let's say something like gasoline, right? In a hyperinflating currency, with everything else being free, you can go to the gas station with silver and say, I would like some gas. The trouble is, if the price, let's say gas has been limited to $2, which is, ridiculously low, there's going to be, 100 people in a line just to get to the gas station. So even if you have the silver, you can't walk up to the man, even if the man wants to sell you gas for silver, you have 200 people that will beat the shit out of you if you try. Well, I'm going to pay in silver, so I'm going to go to my special gas tank over here. Good luck, peons,
Right.
It's just not going to work. So there, there's things you have to think about, and things might go different. Now, it's not going to last long. I don't know how long it will last, but it will not be long, because you can't have a functioning society if everyone's waiting 8 hours for gas. That's what collapsed the USSR. The USSR collapsed because people were waiting 8 hours in line for their meager rations,
Well, then why did it take 70 years? They were under price controls for 70 years.
Yeah, there were several times that the US actually did a bunch of grain sales to the Soviets. I think the global cabal kind of bailed out the USSR a few times. Just
right,
like in China.
Talking about that, yeah.
Yeah, China did the same thing happened with China. Tiananmen Square was a tipping point, and then the Bush administration came in and said, no, we like you guys right where you are. We'll support you. Don't worry.
Oh, great. Bush.
Yeah. Papa Bush. Papa Doc Bush.
Right. He was a bad man.
Yeah. It's amazing. You know, one thing I do love about the decentralized information is we are quickly realizing how wicked these people are. Because before we, in the 80s and 90s, we had no idea. You got what the news told you. So you learned that like Nixon was a bad guy, but you didn't learn that, you know, Reagan wasn't a particularly great guy. Bush was a terrible guy, you know.
Murray Rothbard hated Reagan.
Yeah.
Hated him. Because like he functioned as the same function that let's say, you know, the right wing in Israel does. Where they join and they promise all these things to the right wing and then they go left. You know, Reagan took all the libertarian energy and he spoke libertarian language and he promised all these libertarian things and then he ended up being the biggest war spender, you know, ever. So he kind of took the libertarian movement and threw in the trash.
Yeah, we've been burned a few times.
Yeah, which is why I've pretty much given up on politics and I'm just waiting for it to fall over. And I've gone local, and what I'm trying to do is just speak the truth and see how many individual people I can wake up, because that's going to be the revolution. It's not going to be from the top down. It's going to be from the bottom up.
Yeah, it does matter who's on the other side of it. Let me put it this way. I think, and I could be wrong, I could always be wrong, at least in American politics, Biden is guaranteed to confiscate all the gold like FDR did. Biden will, you know, the Biden regime, I mean, Biden's, you know, just a walking Roomba, but the Biden regime will definitely confiscate all the gold and try and get the central bank, you know, the Federal Reserve recapitalized and restarted. They're going to try and do that again. There's a decent chance Trump will go back to just issuing the gold coins directly and the gold and silver coins directly. So, decent chance. Now, some of his advice, I've researched into his advice. Peter Navarro is terrible. He's one of the worst. He's a big tariff guy. He doesn't understand. I mean, for somebody who teaches economics, he does not understand it very well, at least not in the Austrian sense, which is funny because he bashes the neoliberal monetary theorist, all that stuff. But if you listen to him talk, he's, in my opinion, no better. Now you get other people who are talking about returning to gold. They're talking about going to a gold standard, but there's different gold standards. Like I said, you can issue the money directly and let the people trade in it, or you can take everyone's gold and issue notes off of that. Which apparently we were talking before the camera started, or camera went on, the Zimbabwe has gone to a gold standard, but it looks like it is we're going to keep all the gold in a vault. And here are some notes that are theoretically attached to the gold.
Yeah, that sounds like assignats to me.
Yeah,
close to it. It's not quite that, but in Zimbabwe, there's a culture of you don't trust the government's money at all. So even if they went to a gold standard, if this is a tough question. Like, let's say we're on a hyperinflationary path, and the CPI is going higher and higher and higher every month, and we're at 40, 50, 60, it keeps getting worse. And then let's say the dollar crashes, and then after it does, the government takes all the gold and promises to back the dollar with it. You can't just do that and then assume that the currency will work, because it has to be demonstrated that the two are substitutable. Yeah, there has to be a test of it, and we can watch what's happening in Zimbabwe as a test case. Is the Zimbabwean dollar going to survive now that they say it's gold back? That's all I have to do. You just steal people and then tell them that you have all of it. I don't think that's good enough, really. So is Zimbabwe going to make its currency actually exchangeable? Like, people can go to the central bank and a Zimbabwean can go and say, here's like $1 trillion. Give me an ounce of gold or whatever it is. I don't think that's going to happen. I think this is just them stealing again.
Yeah, I think so. Because if they did, everyone would immediately run out and buy the gold. I wouldn't trust the Zimbabwe government to keep the gold on one-to-one with the notes. I'd run and get the gold.
Yeah, that's the thing about gold bugs, is that they think that once you mention the word gold and currency, it becomes like this magical thing where the currency suddenly works because you said it's on a gold standard. So everyone's like, oh, yay, look at that. But like, seriously? You're going to give your gold to Zimbabwe and then take their paper and then invest in that? That sounds totally ridiculous.
Who's Mantu?
He is our leader. He seized power in a bloodless coup. All smotherings.
Just like Jimmy Carter.
Yeah, sounds insane. Or, you know, who are the, like, Neil Kashkari? Like, you're going to trust that guy with your gold? Or Lael Brainard? I'm sorry, we got way off track. We were talking about capital controls. So the final point I was going to add on the capital controls was to be... The capital controls are the in-game. It is a function of the in-game. It doesn't delay it. It's just a mutation of it. So instead of the currency hyperinflating and people running out to the stores, the prices... let's say there's price controls and capital controls. So if there's capital and price controls, you go to the store and the prices haven't changed much, but there is your money is locked in your bank account and you can't get it out to get it. And there's also a long line of people because the prices are too low. So it's this massive, massive misallocation of resources at every step of the chain. And it is the end game. It's a mutation of the end game. So the way I advise people on my episode was logically, if you see that your money has been locked into a bank account, you should honestly just write it off. Don't waste your time trying to get it out, because you're not going to get it out until it's worthless. And if it's a deflation or crash, you're not going to get it at all. The bank's going to go out of business. So don't, you know, if you are worried about that happening suddenly, I would have some maybe some paper reserves. Okay. Just to get you through the initial stages.
I think practically... first of all, before we get to the practical, I think the analogy of, you know, the hose is just going wild, or they need to clamp it off somewhere. So with price controls, they clamp it off at the store, and in capital controls, they clamp it off at the bank account. But it's the same thing. The hose is going to explode either way. So I think practically, a good way that occurred to me to get around capital controls or to get around price controls, really the same thing, is to localize, find out who are your local producers, your local farmer's market, the guy who, you know, I just went to a guy who fixes watches. So there's one guy who has real skill. People in your neighborhood who have skills, your neighbors who have skills, and you tell them now, look, I know I sound crazy, but if your bank gets shut down or the banking system stops, come to me and I have real money and I'll trade with you. You know, if you just set it up, on the low now, so that these people know who you are and come to you for trade when they need you. And then you can operate under the capital controls, under the price controls, because your money's outside the banking system and you've got it set up. It's like, it's a rickety system of pipes, but at least you got something.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And the market always attempts to clear. So to go back to the gas station example, like if there's a 2-hour line, there will be somebody hungry enough that they will, you give them the keys to your car and some money, and they will wait in the car in the line and fill your car up and deliver it back to you. And there'll be some sort, you know, it'll be an Uber app kind of thing. So there will be some sort of market clearing device where, you know, you can afford or you can get your gas if you can afford it. You have to pay for these other services, but you know, these things will happen. The market will attempt to clear.
You know, you could even see in that thinking, you could see long lines as part of the price, meaning that's an opportunity
to be
gone, right? So how much does gas really cost when you have to wait 6 hours in line to get $2 a gallon gas? It costs maybe $50 a gallon, or depending on what you would earn in those 6 hours that you can't earn when you're sitting in your car waiting for gas. So,
or if you have to pay, clear. You have to pay that guy $15 an hour or $18 an hour or whatever to sit in the car. Yeah,
the market will always find the clearing price. That's a good point.
Yeah, so there will always be a service available. But now, if they put police officers at every gas station and say, no, we're gonna, you know, the state is determined to make this happen, then yeah, you're gonna have shortages and you're not gonna get your gas. But then it will last. That, you know, then people will riot because they won't have gas. So, and then we'll get back to the free market.
Yeah, and the more policemen they hire, they have to be paid too, and it costs them more, and you know, they run out of money also. And speaking of states running out of money, we can go to our second topic here, which was China hoarding gold and why that's not a big deal. I have one thing to say about this. What did you want to talk about China? Was China hoarding gold?
Oh, it's just on TV, China is like, I mean, this big spike we recently saw in gold appears to be central banks, and China seems to be leading the charge on the purchase of the gold. What I was saying,
what's the evidence of that?
I heard people talking about it. I didn't look into it directly.
Rumors, right?
I don't have direct. I is from what I heard, I think it was like you and Alistair McLeod and people saying it was central bank buying. Wasn't it you?
I didn't say that.
You didn't say that? Okay.
Yeah.
I think it was Alistair. And then I'm gonna back up and say it was Alistair McLeod and maybe nobody special finance. But they might say it wasn't me either, and I made it up in my mind. It was a fever dream I had. We can look it up and make sure, confirm for next episode. But assuming that it is central bank buying that is driving this recent surge in gold, mostly because, you know why? The premiums haven't increased. It was you saying the premiums haven't increased. So that was leading people to the conclusion that it was central bank buying.
Okay, well, I can tell you what it's not. I don't know what it is. Like, you know, defining God. I can tell you what he is, and I can't tell you what he is. So it's not the stackers. It's also not it's not the retail ETF buyers, because that's bleeding gold still. Even yesterday, I think GLD lost, not yesterday, on Friday, it lost like 160,000 ounces. I was saying that the open interest in the futures market is rising, and that's really a war between the bullion banks, which are not the central banks. The bullion banks are like the really big G-SIB banks, a lot of them, like JP Morgan, HSBC, Bank of America, those ones. And they're fighting with the hedge funds. So this is a speculative war on gold derivatives between the bullion banks and the hedge funds that are long and the bullion banks that are short. Whether central banks appear in here, I don't know. Maybe they do. I hope they don't, because I don't want them to have any.
I remember now, it was Adrian Day. It was Adrian Day on Wall Street Silver.
Adrian Day is like the guy in charge of, I think, Peter Schiff's mutual funds.
Yes, I remember that. That's my source. It was Adrian Day on Wall Street Silver. I remember that now. Yeah, he said it was central bank. He said, he did it through, he derived this conclusion through the same logic you are. He's saying, well, it can't be this, and it can't be this, and it can't be this. So the only explanation available to him was that it was central bank buying. So maybe it's large families, not central banks, that you are. What do you call those people? The large families, the old family offices. Yeah. So maybe it's that and not. But assuming that it is, and there are rumors that China has an enormous amount of gold. The CCP has an enormous amount of gold in its vaults. So let's assume that they do, and let's assume the end game happens, and then, you know, all the currencies kind of float away into the ether, and whoever has gold has money, and whoever doesn't. Mm-hmm. And the Chinese government turns out the CCP has more gold than America ever had in Fort Knox, right? Let's say 10, 15, 20,000 tons of gold. Why is that not a big deal? And the reason I say it's not a big deal is the same thing we were talking about before. They have to spend it. You can't just do the Zimbabwe thing where you say, oh, we have this gold and we have this paper. They actually have to get the gold circulating out into the economy. And once they do that, then the money's in the economy. And then the people that are trading in real money are free. So, the CCP would lose its enslavement, one of its main enslavement mechanisms, which is their social credit score system.
Yeah. It's like, for example, is it a problem living next to a neighborhood of billionaires? It depends. Do those billionaires have the ability to come and attack you every day and rob you just because they feel like it? Or are they just being rich and enjoying their lives and spending money? And, you know, it could be a very good thing to live next to rich people if they're spending and patronizing your business and making you rich too. It's like that. I hate to say this term. I don't really like you, but the trickle down Republican bullshit theory. Okay. I really don't like that simplistic, like overly simplistic economic jargon, but it does have some layer of truth to it. So the problem isn't that necessarily that China has more gold than the United States. It's, do they have the ability to steal from you? Can they keep inflating it? And now that I'm thinking about it, so you could ask the question, why did it worked in 1934, right? FDR was able to say, oh, give me your gold. And then, you know, these dollars are now $35 an ounce and the dollar kept circulating. It was the Great Depression, right? But it wasn't like total mass starvation and end of society. They hobbled along and things restarted and things got going. So how did that work? Like, how can you just declare 21 and then 35 and then people just like, okay, whatever. I think the answer is that in the Great Depression, it was deflationary again. Like, people wanted dollars. And so now they didn't change the dollar didn't collapse. They didn't change their habits, and now all of a sudden it's from 21 to 35. So you can do that and thereby maintain the trust in the dollar without actually making it convertible to the public, right? He made it much less convertible. He made it only convertible to central banks or foreign central banks, and he outlawed gold in America. But once your currency completely collapses and the trust is gone, you can't just take the gold and say, "Oh, it's here now, and you can use the currency."
Yeah,
it's currency. Fine. Right? That's not happening.
Yeah, people believed in America back then. I mean, America had not done them wrong in their minds. So, you know, people believed in it, and I think they were willing to offer credit. You know, credit is a trust mechanism, or is a mechanism based on trust. So I think people were willing to extend credit to those notes. I don't think anyone's going to extend credit to any paper pretty soon.
Yeah. You know? So then China's going to have to spend its money.
Yeah, it's going to have to. And not to mention that the Chinese people are going to be broke. I mean, really broke and furious. So I think the quickest thing the CCP would do would be, "Oh, here's a bunch of gold. No, don't kill us."
Chinese people being furious. That's hard to picture because they're so servile and they just do anything their government says. I mean, they went through the famine and 40 million people starved to death, and like the government still survived.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe, you know, maybe it will survive. I don't know. Maybe they'll just be more draconian and people will eat it.
Yeah. Yeah, so it doesn't really matter. You don't have to like make a big deal about China having more gold than the United States. It's not the fact that the United States had so much gold that made it rich. It did make it rich, but what they did, the reason that America was able to become so rich and so powerful over and above any other empire that's ever existed is they used the monetary base of their gold to create a global inflationary system where all of the goods and services just flowed into their own country. And all they had to do was export paper and say, "Oh, that's gold too. And that's gold. We have it all. Just give us the stuff." And it was like, "Oh, okay, fine." Well, we can't do anything because you won World War II and like you made us agree to this monetary system. So here's all the stuff and we'll take the paper." And now they're stuck with stacks of huge stacks of paper. And they're like, "I don't know if we can keep doing this, guys, but we're kind of stuck here. What are we going to do now?" So they're like, "Well, why don't we just like get some gold in case for when this thing falls over, we'll have some money." And they're like, "Okay, so maybe that's what's happening now."
Yeah. I think that's a pretty decent explanation. I don't even know if the central banks understand it. Is that, you know, the bankers, because they're huffing their own farts so much, but instinctually, I guess maybe it's pushing them in the right direction. It's like all the YouTube. I mean, there's people, you know, we've talked about this before. There's people who are collecting silver to ward off the space aliens, but you know, as long as you're hoarding silver, it doesn't matter.
Yeah. It's like, does any single brain cell in your brain know what you're doing? No. but like your entire brain as a whole, you kind of got control over your activities. So there's there's a part of your brain where it's like, "I'm going to stack silver to ward off the aliens." It might not be a dominant part of your brain, but in some people's it is. And, you know, it just depends, you know, what brain cells they're tickling at the time and what they're used to and the amount of substances that they've ingested and what parts of their brain those things activate.
The other thing I want to add, I forgot to mention this. So if China has tons of gold and America doesn't have much gold, let's say Fort Knox is empty and, you know, there's some people with some gold in their private hands and that's about it. The prices in America in gold terms will be much lower than the prices in China because the gold is a medium of exchange. So if you have more medium of exchange in the system, then prices are higher because there's more of the medium floating around. So if the there will be lower prices in America. So the people with gold will be encouraged to disgorge it because they can get more stuff for less gold. And then B, people in China who have gold will be encouraged to import things from America as well. So eventually the gold will flow and balance everything out.
Yeah, well that's what a gold standard is supposed to do.
It'll be an osmosis.
It's for every good and service, and for labor, that's how things are supposed to happen.
No one wants to actually part with their gold. They would much rather part with notes for gold and then renege on the notes. That's people are just all doom and gloom. Oh, you know, the Chinese social credit system's coming to America and China's going to dominate with their, you know, state. This has always been throughout history. Even in like the 1930s, people are saying, oh, the Nazi way of doing things is just, you know, it's so superior to our free way of doing things in America. Look, they're taking over everything. And oh, this is, you know, we have to be more like them or we're going to lose the race. Right.
Yeah,
this happens every single time. Then Soviet Union. Oh, the Soviets are taking over everything, and you know they got to they got into space first. Their rocket program's better than ours. Look how many bombers they're building compared to us. We need to be more like them, or we're going to lose. Right? This happens every single time. The totalitarian regime, you know, maybe on paper looks like it's doing better, but it's not, and it never will. Freedom is always the better way to live.
Yeah. Yeah, so this the dystopian future, like the techno dystopian future you say in a lot of your shows, it's not going to happen. We're going to get close to it. They're attempting it. I'm not denying that they're attempting. I know they're attempting it, but they're not going to succeed. They can't, because that would collapse society, would collapse production, and people would stop doing anything, and then everyone would starve to death. It all ends in the same thing. The question is, like, what after this happens, what level of technology do we kind of settle at and to build from there? Do we continue on the AI trajectory? Do we continue in the direction of techno dystopia? iRobot, the robots taking over, something like that, Terminator, who knows? But there's going to be a technological regression at the end of this. And it's very interesting to think of where we're going to settle.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the last big one was the fall of Rome, and it was quite a regression.
Yeah.
So hopefully don't go back to not taking baths every day.
I could not take baths. That might actually be important. You know,
really?
taking a bath every day. This is kind of a detour, but taking a bath every day, and I'm not saying don't ever take a bath or don't ever wash, but smell is something that we have lost the use of, because we keep wiping off our stenches,
yeah,
and covering them with deodorant and other fragrances too often, and that might lead us to dating the wrong people and reproducing with the wrong women. I'm not sure, but it's a theory.
You're saying don't bathe so that your animal musk can seep through. And
I'm saying I have an idea for a dating service where you have to submit a sweat sample and have it analyzed and then matched. That might work.
I don't know how I feel about this, Robin.
Okay. Well, I'm off the market. You're off the market. So yeah. I guess our senses of smell are not that bad.
My wife is always telling me to take a shower.
Okay.
All right. Last topic: hyperinflation in France. The booklet.
Wait, no, you said Repocalypse and COVID print.
Oh yes, Repocalypse and COVID print. Yes. We can cover this briefly. So I had an argument with somebody I was talking to. Not an argument. I had a discussion with somebody I was talking to about the COVID print, and she was saying the COVID print was necessary because they had shut everybody down. You know, it's the typical, you know, the cure being, where, you know, they break your kneecap and then, you know, a cast is necessary. Well, of course the cast is necessary. You broke my kneecap. So, you know, they're saying, oh, well, the print was necessary because we were all locked down. It was a crisis. It was an emergency. We had to do it, right? And what I said was, no, actually the printing had started. And she's a big Trump fan. She said, Trump had the balance sheet of the Fed was rolling off. And he was doing great. And, you know, everything was going great before. And then COVID hit and we had to explode it up. And I said, no, if you look closely, the print started again right before COVID. So it was the Repocalypse happened because they were draining the balance sheet. We had a sudden surge in repo rates. And they went back to Zerpenberg like right before. Did they go back to Zerpenberg?
Hold on. I will get the chart.
Yeah,
they went back to Burr.
They went back to Burr. They started QE again. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Now, so it didn't go vertical. It didn't go completely vertical until COVID. However, the timing of that is like, I don't know if they needed to go vertical or not. Like, could they have stayed on that trajectory?
Is the Fed's balance sheet right here? is September 2019, August 2019. So here's the end of QE3. We can zoom it out even more, right? So here is right, you know, the regular inflationary low reserve system, and bam, 2008 financial crisis, QE1, wobbly wobbly, QE2 over here, nothing going, QE3, and here we stayed stable for, what was it like? I have this bar here, and I would get rid of it. We were stable from 2014 to 2018, about 4 years, and then we started QT over here. The Fed was rolling off its balance sheet, and then bam, we had the apocalypse. September 17th, 2019. And then if we zoom in here, we can see that, let's go to the 10-year, and the balance sheet starts to expand right here, right? This is QE starting again. And they said it was temporary, and then wham, lockdowns, and that's when it went vertical. And just show you where we are now, if I turn off our heads here, this is the next QT over here, and then wham, regional bank bailout, and then we're going down, 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 and the rate is increasing because the bank term funding program is being paid back now. I don't know where the fault line is, the next one, but it's definitely there somewhere, and we're going to hit it.
So the question of the tinfoil hat variety is, was COVID planned or even just taken advantage of to print the notes needed? That is the question. That is the $1 million question, as they say.
I don't know. Well, let me ask you a different question. Does it make a difference if it's one way or the other? Let's say it was planned. Therefore, what do we have to do differently, assuming it was planned, other than if it wasn't planned?
Oh man, if it was planned, then we have smarter overlords than I give them credit, than I gave, was giving them credit for.
Okay, then it wasn't planned.
It wasn't
planned. Okay,
if they truly are the drooling idiots we think they are, then yeah, I would say maybe it was a crisis. I think it benefited everybody at the same time that needed the benefit of it. You know, the people that hated Trump wanted to blame a disease on him. The news media loves to blow things out. Remember murder bees? Remember we were going to have bees that were going to come in from Africa? Were you in America at the time? This was in the 90s.
Yeah.
We had these bees. They were coming in from Africa, and they were going to kill all the native honeybees, and they weren't going to produce any honey, and their stings are fatal.
The bees that could chop off the heads of other bees?
Yeah.
Asian giant hornets, nicknamed
murder hornets,
capable of killing insects and even rodents. And viral videos of these attacks from years ago are making their way around the internet again. Individual hornets will capture bees at a hive entrance, cut off their heads, and mash their bodies into a meatball so they can drag it back to feed their young.
I remember that. It's so ridiculous. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, none of that happened. And then Ebola. And Ebola was going to come in, and you know, someone had a case of it somewhere in Texas or something, and then it was going to spread, and we were all going to die. I mean, the media loves this. So the fact that this thing actually was spreading sort of set them, you know, it gave them a full year of something to talk about. Yeah, so you know, the media, you know, they got to do their thing, and then the CDC got to boost its you know, budgets by astronomical levels, and you know, be the important people who saved the day. You know, everybody got to benefit and feast at the corpse of liberty. so I don't think, I don't think it was orchestrated in that way. However, I think once it showed up, I think the Fed was quite happy to say, yes, we will print all the necessary notes.
Yeah.
Because that's what they do.
What could have happened? You know, it's generally how these systems tend to work. Again, like we can use the example again of like a single brain cell in your brain doesn't know exactly what you're doing, and isn't working really consciously together with any other cell. It's just like what the whole system is doing, and your brain cells, one brain cell is part of it. So you have this guy Fauci who just wants to increase budgets to himself, and he wants to do these weird things because it this is what tickles them. They like doing it. You know, they like controlling things. They like being Frankenstein. That's why we have these stories of these weird doctors that, you know, sew body parts together and create things, because that's what humans do. Like you see monkeys in a cell playing with puzzles. It's the same thing. It's just a lot more lot sicker and a lot more dangerous. So you have people like Fauci, you have people like whoever's in power, and they want to play and they want to tinker and they want to pull a different lever. And they're like, why don't we try lockdowns? But what if they'll listen to us? What if we can actually like tell people just stay in their homes and they will? Let's try that and see what happens. And then people actually listen. And then, you know, somebody calls over from the White House to the Federal Reserve and says, look, these idiots, they're staying at home. Like, why don't you just print a bunch of money? And the Fed's like, well, okay, sure. We want to do that anyway. Yeah. Sure. Okay, let's do that. So it probably happened more like that.
That's what I'm thinking as well. Now, if there hadn't been COVID, they still would have had to do some sort of print. That I'm sure of.
Yeah, there would have been a severe banking crisis, and then maybe the balance sheet would have gone higher and higher and higher, and then it wouldn't have been fast enough. So something would have happened, some kind of financial collapse somewhere, whatever, some bank or real estate or again, whatever sector, and then you would have seen the vertical move again, whatever. Yeah. It was just taking longer.
Would that have been the end game? Like, did they delay the end game through COVID? I don't know. Maybe.
I don't think so.
I don't think so either. Excuse me. Because the end game will be when people run out of the streets to spend their currency. So.
Yeah, I remember very clearly. It was March 2020. The stocks, the gold stocks were like tanking like crazy. I recall. My wife was looking at me and she's like, Rafi, like, just promise me, like, I'm not going to lose you. Like, she meant psychologically. And I was like, no, this has to be it. Like, this is it. And it was it in a sense. It wasn't it, but like, I got through it. And then after that, I gathered my thoughts. And I was like, I have to start the Endgame Investor because we're on the way now.
You when a wife says something like that, their husband looks like a raving lunatic. Like, you must have looked absolutely insane.
Yeah.
I can only imagine that the hair frazzle.
Yeah, it's like you can feel the blood draining from your face.
Yeah. And, so that was the well, I, you know, I'm so glad you started the EGI because you saved me and my family too. Because I was, you know, living my life, just being another cog in the machine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've made references to you in a few without calling you by name in some of the recent publications on Substack. Check out endgameinvestor.substack.com. You've had your own run-ins with insanity. Brief, yes. Right? It happens.
It has that effect. It does have that effect. Yes, the clarity, the sudden clarity. You're like, oh.
Yeah, it's like it's the whole chain kind of like enters into your brain, but you can't sort it out, and it's like these like pictures and flashes, and like, hold on, it's coming in, and like, what was that movie, like Johnny Mnemonic? Remember that movie? It was a really bad. It was a really bad. What's his name? Keanu Reeves movie, like, and he's carrying around this information as to how to cure this disease that's caused by electronics in his brain. It's 80 gigabytes, right? And then he has these leaking of information in his head. And like, and it's like causing him to die. It's like that's what happens when it all comes together. It's like everything just like juts into your brain at once, and you can't handle it. So you gotta like just jump up and down and tell your wife that you're not gonna lose it, and hopefully you won't.
Now, how is it, like we were talking before about smart people being dumb? How is it that there are so many people in this space and so few get it as well as you do? This, I mean, not to fluff your ego or.
No, I don't. It's not fluffing. I don't feel good about this.
Yeah.
do I feel good about gold hitting 2350? Like, I turned off my phone, then I turned it on after Shabbat, and then 2350. I'm like, okay, well, I have more money, but like, oh God, it doesn't feel good.
No.
It's like choosing perpetual suffering. I'm not suffering. I feel fine, but it's not pleasant.
But like, how is it like so many people, the logic of how this happened is so crystal clear to me. Like, it's so just, oh, there was money, and then there's credit, And then if you take away the money, then there's just credit and you're just issuing endless amounts of credit. But there are so few people who understand, who get to that point. And it's such a simple, logical point. I mean, and these are people like on YouTube making videos with way, way, way more subscribers than you or I have, mm-hmm. you know, and they're, oh, Bitcoin.
Yeah. I can't really answer the question, but I can, yeah. I can give two literary examples. One, I remember I would recommend that you read a book called Mother Night by Kurt Vonnegut. I had this Vonnegut phase where I read all of Kurt Vonnegut in like 6 months, and it really took me to a different planet. I don't recommend reading all of Vonnegut in 6 months, but you know, read Kurt Vonnegut.
You got a major paper coming up on Kurt Vonnegut.
So how are you going to write the paper then, huh?
Hi, I'm Kurt Vonnegut.
Why'd you fail me?
I didn't, Thornton. You failed me. Whoever did write it doesn't know the first thing about Kurt Vonnegut.
Me? Hey, Kurt, you read lips. Fuck you!
And there was one book called Mother Night, and it was about this American Nazi named Howard W. Campbell Jr., who had this radio show where he was like bashing Jews and yelling at them, but he would put in these like codes with coughs and sneezes and pauses to convey intelligence information to the American forces. So he was a spy while he was doing his anti-Semitic radio show. And he had a description of, he's the narrator of the story. He had a description of how their brains worked. It was like, they were like clocks, and they had clocks have gears. And we were just talking about clocks before we started recording. The clocks have gears, but there's like, let's say if there's like two gears missing, if there's two teeth missing on the gear, then at that, if that point in the watch, the second hand skips, you know, two clicks and goes straight to, you know, and the time is off, and it always misses, let's say, 2 seconds a minute. So if you tell them that they're missing a gear, it's not like they can recognize that because they've already formulated their thoughts in terms of the missing gear. Like, what do you mean I have a missing gear? And like their time is off. And so you can't really talk to them, but that's how they think, because they've shaved off a gear and they just don't think that way. And I can give the example of the other literary example. If you want to take it historical, fine. If you don't, fine. But the entire Old Testament is a war against polytheism. It's like, it doesn't make sense to carve a statue and say that is God. How did that start? Because it started because somebody saw the star and said that, you know, it's way up there and it's shiny, or the sun or whatever, it must be powerful and you must serve the creator. And then somebody made a form of the star down on planet Earth and then bowed down to it to respect the sun, to respect God. And then some kid saw somebody's bowing down to the stone and said, that's God. And he didn't realize that it was connected by derivative layers. And nobody understood this. Nobody understood it. And until Abraham came and said, look, guys, this is all crap. And it started his own people, and still nobody gets it. So, it's hard to understand that you live on a mountain of derivative chains, because you see people exchanging money and they're like, what's that? And it's just paper. Oh, okay. I got to get some. And then they just continue the chain and that's it.
I'll tell you, when you first connected all the dots for me, I went out and I told that, I said, everybody listen, the money's free. You have to get gold, silver, and like it was like the crazy guy walked into the saloon. You know, people were looking at me quizzically, and somewhere just howling with laughter, howling. So, you know, it's you know, you get treated like a false prophet.
No, but I had this experience also with vaccines. Because I gave my kids the standard compliment, what's it called?
Not MMR.
MMT. MMR, whatever else, they get polio and all this other stuff. And then, because I never questioned it. It was like, when anyone would say these things are not safe, I'm like, what are you talking about? We had these diseases. Now we don't have these diseases. How do they not work? Of course they work. It's like my brain at that point with vaccines was like, if you talk to me about vaccines, I'm just going to stop listening. Right.
Yeah.
I'm just going to turn my head off because I know that you're crazy. I know it. So I just don't listen. Talk to me about anything else. I'm not willing to listen to you about vaccines. That's how it was. And then COVID happened. And then I was like, wait a second. And then I heard about this book. It's the same damn thing as derivatives over derivatives over derivatives. It's this book called Turtles All the Way Down. And the truth is that that vaccines might work in the sense of they might reduce the chances of you contracting a disease, but nobody knows the safety statistics because all vaccines are tested against previous generations of vaccines. There's no placebos in any of these damn trials. And I didn't know that. And so they're all resting on the previous ones. And it's all a stack of turtles that are lying on nothing because there's no original safety tests. And then that was able to, that entered into my head. And that was like another thing of like pictures, like, what have I done? And then it opened me up to it. But you have to understand where you are. And if you're trying to knock over people's world and say everything you've believed in is a bunch of bullshit, they're just going to turn off.
Yeah. Yeah. If someone's stuck in it, you're not going to get them. There's nothing you can really say.
So how does it happen? It happened to me on certain aspects because you grow up a certain way and you can't accept that the doctors who put this stuff into your kids might not have known exactly what they were doing.
Yeah. Well, because they were trusting, the researchers, and then, it goes back to a mistake somewhere far up the chain. You just don't know.
Yeah. And I recall we read this book, my wife and I, and then we were like avid listeners to Brett and Heather Weinstein of Dark Horse Podcast. And they were slowly coming to it also. They took the same path we did. And they were very, very pro all kinds of vaccines. And then as they were getting closer and closer to understanding that it was all a stack of turtles based on, all the way down with no foundation, with no safety foundation, at least, I remember Heather was saying and she was responding to something that RFK Jr. had said, because she was a big RFK Jr. fan. So she was responding to a claim that he made that none of these vaccines have any safety testing against placebo, and then she said that in this sort of slow word after word, because she was she had to say it and she didn't want to say it, and she's like, that claim is true. And I was like, yes, Heather, you got there, you made it, okay, now we can start rebuilding. It's very difficult, though. It's like you have to accept that you have to rebuild from scratch.
Yeah. Yeah. Breaking down your psychological walls is very tough. Very, very tough. But tougher for some people than others. I'm a little weird in that if someone's like, you're wrong, I'm like, oh, you're right. I guess I am wrong. but other people,
there are
other people,
there are certain things, though, that will be more difficult for. I don't know what they are.
Yeah.
So, for example, one of mine was vaccinated, but it took this whole thing to like to blow that out of the water for me. But Yeah. Everybody has all teeth that don't work. Everyone has gear teeth.
Everyone's got missing teeth. There you go.
Thanks for watching, guys. And check out Phil's channel at The Bitter Draft on Rumble. Link in the description below. Check out Endgame Investor at Substack. And check out my Patreon if you want to learn more about my biblical thoughts in the current era of insanity and why it's almost over.
Thanks, Rafi. Look forward to talking with you next time.
All right. Bye.